If you make the decision to go get that body or go get that marriage that you want, then you need to then step back and say, now, who do I need to become to
Yes.
have that and to sustain that? Because the person I am today, like I say this to guys all the time, I want this marriage. They go, great. You're not the guy that can have that. You want to make $1 million next year? You're not the person that can do that.
Yes,
You're
absolutely.
not. The formula you run is not the person that can do that. So why don't you go become that guy by eliminating the pieces that aren't him? Because the real him can get that.
Are you constantly striving to become the very best version of yourself, but feel like it's always at the expense of your relationship? You strive to expand your business or career, but then your relationship is suffering and your partner's feeling disconnected. Do you find it challenging to balance your personal and professional life while still prioritizing your own needs and the needs of your partner? If so, you're not alone. In today's fast-paced and ever-changing world, maintaining healthy and fulfilling relationships can be a real struggle for many. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Shaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together we will step away from focusing on all of the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode, Ian and Meredith Lobas, founders of Irreplaceable Man Community, share the secrets they've discovered to unleash the power of relationships for personal growth and fulfillment so that you can have it all. Becoming an irreplaceable man, by the way, is not a program just for men, and it's not this final destination we're seeking. It's a continuous journey of personal growth and fulfillment. And it also teaches us that by prioritizing the power of relationships and self-improvement, we can unlock our full potential and become the very best version of ourselves. In this episode, you're going to learn how building a strong foundation in a relationship through effective communication is essential. By investing time and effort into understanding and connecting with your partner, you create an environment that fosters personal growth and fulfillment. All right, athletes, before we dive into our conversation on relationships today, I want to remind you that there are still a few spots open for you to join me in Transformation in Paradise, Costa Rica, this November, November 25 to December 2nd, where we will be releasing self-sabotaging habits and addictive behaviors once and for all that have been keeping us from becoming the highest version of ourselves. This is just 7 weeks out, and if this sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, you can head on over to sherryshaban.com/retreats to learn more and to reserve your spot. Now, I've recently opened up a few more spots, but they're not going to be available much longer. So if this is something that you'd like to do and still have some questions about, make sure to reach out soon. There's a calendar link right there on the page to connect with me so that I can help you answer all your questions and see if you are a right fit for this retreat. And by the way, if you rate and review this podcast and then you take the screenshot and send it over to Sherry at sherryshaban.com, you receive a 10% off voucher to join me in Transformation in Paradise. All right, athletes, now without further ado, let's go ahead and meet Ian and Meredith. Well, hello, Ian and Meredith. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having
Hi.
us.
I'm so excited to have this conversation for many reasons. And I'm going to start off first by saying, Ian, you're somebody that I have admired for many, many years. I think when I first met you, you were in this mastermind group that I had just joined that I didn't feel like I was ready to be a part of just yet. And you were doing this segment called Monday Night Live. And I was completely floored by your performance. You're probably one of the best interviewers I've ever seen. I would really come on every Monday when you would do the interview. And then since they've changed that, to be honest, I'm not as dedicated and committed. So that's how much I've been admiring you from afar. And so it's such a great pleasure to have you on today, and even more of a pleasure to have Meredith on here too, because a lot of what we talk about on this show is health, and health not being this static state that we're trying to achieve in the far off future where it's dependent on our weight and our BMI and being absent of disease, but instead what I believe health is a beautiful balance between
the relationship we have with our body, the relationship we have with others, and then the relationship that we have with ourselves. So before we begin, I want to welcome you one more time to the show, and then also ask you, super curious as to why relationships is something that is important to you and something that you help men harness much stronger so that they become the irreplaceable man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us again. We're that Monday Night Live got like my podcast. I mean, I don't know if it's career, like it kicked me off this journey of podcasting, and every one of those episodes, I got good feedback and I thought it was the worst thing ever. I did a terrible job. So really though, what I started doing, and I think this will be helpful to the audience, was Mary can attest to this, is I started applying my discipline and obsession over like how to ask questions, how to navigate. I'm a huge Howard Stern fan. So I really, and he's the best interviewer possible. So I started understanding how he lets people just go wherever they want, but he's always there with them. And he always has a question for them wherever they take him. And so I was fascinated with that. And I wanted it to be more of the human's experience versus like, okay, question one, question two, question three, question four. And in this just beautiful open conversation, like Howard has, like, or just a fly on the wall. So it's, you know, like applying the already natural skills and talents and habits that you have to something that you're interested in, and then setting standards for that and leveling yourself up. And then that launched into hosting a very large real estate podcast called Real Estate Rockstars, because I interviewed a Pat on that little Monday Night Live podcast. Mm-hmm. The next morning I texted Pat and said, hey, I'm curious about how you operate a giant podcast. Can I just sit in with you? And like the next day, yeah, Tuesday, he said, yeah, come on today at 10 a.m. We had four interviews. Pat left in the first 10 minutes of the first interview. I had 4 hours of interviews. He texted me and said, you got it. You're fine. And I'm freaking out. And so like my own self-sabotage and self-criticism was trying to win as best as possible. And I had the mentor that we had in that networking group and Pat saying, you're doing a great job. Here are some, you know, course corrections, some tips on how to be better. And I just didn't take those personally. I took them as really good criticism. Right. And I said, all right, how do I apply these? Because I want to earn these mentors' time. And mm-hmm. I didn't want to take that for granted, because I knew as a future mentor of people that I wanted to make sure that that karma was good from the mentors that I had. So I just want to give a context around that. That led to an increase in listenership on Real Estate Rockstars. That led to me meeting some incredible people. That led to me being on stage at a podcast convention where everybody had their own podcast except for me. And I'm speaking on stage about how to take over someone else's very large podcast. Then that led to my own podcast. And so like, you know, there's probably 500-600 episodes that I've done. And it all started with that. Right. So I appreciate it, because in my mind, I was horrible, terrible. Right. Like no one would ever want to listen to me. And you're like, I just jumped on there to hear you. So that's super cool to hear that the dichotomy between that.
Yeah, true story. And it's so interesting what you're saying, because what I'm picking up from you is that you cared so much around how you showed up in order to serve others. And especially when we're given opportunities for something that big, right? Oftentimes we're thinking about, well, what's in it for me, or what can I do to receive? But instead, what I'm hearing you say is, what can I do to give? And I think that's probably maybe one of the reasons why you feel like it's not good enough, because you're always striving to give more and more and more value. So I love that. I resonate with that. And so Meredith, is he always like that? Is this what you see as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about Howard Stern and the listening and learning, constantly learning, I think is Ian's like motto. And so, yes, I see it all the time in everything we do. It's like something so minuscule will spark something in him. I won't even pick up on whatever it might be. And he'll go on a research craze and all of a sudden he knows everything about this one topic. And I think that also kind of propelled his own podcast and podcasting career, because it was like seeking information, but also to be able to share it with others. Like we sit around the dinner table or, you know, in the car and he's telling us about all these things where I'm like, where, Forerunners and the motor and the sound and the, you know, some things. And I'm like, how do you know all of this?
It's a channeling of the gifts that are innate, right? So like if you put me back in elementary school with severe ADD, dyslexia, and an OCD, I'm a bad kid that's never going to make it.
Right.
But like my dad cultivated this strength in me to say, you're born with this, man. Figure out how to use it to your advantage. None of the stuff you have is a disadvantage. To the outside, when you compare yourself to others, and this is kind of like the weight / BMI / body image, world too. When you compare yourself to others, there's always going to be something that you want that somebody else has. Or when you compare yourself to others, going to fall short on something mm-hmm. because of what your mark is of comparison. Mm-hmm. So I stopped looking at other people and like, why, like that person is so dumb. Why'd they get a better grade than me on a test? And it's not a great test taker. And also I wasn't studying, which was because I didn't care about the information. Like I don't care about 18th century romantic literature. I could care less. I don't care. I don't want to study it. I'm not going to do well on the test. It is what it is. I have this fascination with learning and this like crave, like this curiosity craving. I just want to know about things. So like, why would I not research something that I'm interested in? Even if it's something simple, like, you know, now I want to start doing overlanding and off-roading with a 4Runner. And I've always researched Jeeps and I know so much about Jeeps. And now I want a 4Runner. And I'm like, I don't know a lot about 4Runners. So I'm going to research the different generations and the different engines and the different transmissions and the different axles because it's all applicable. But if you go and look at other people's 4Runners, you're like, this guy's got $100,000 in it plus the cost of the truck. Do I want that? No, I'm going to start with like a $10,000, 12-15-year-old 4Runner, and I'll just start building from there as I learn more, because I think a lot of people like would just go out and buy the $100,000 jacked up souped up 4Runner and just go out there, but they didn't learn anything. And there's a gap between the two. It's like a lottery winner. You got this 4-figure mindset and now you have an 8-figure bank account, but you have no foundation to support a 5, 6, or 7-figure mindset around money. So you have to build, that's what I think that like we do is like we build the foundations to support the level that we want to go to, whether it's our business or our relationship. I mean, we started Men on Purpose and Irreplaceable Man I started it as accountability for me as a husband and a father and a leader. And then we started doing it as accountability for us because it's, you're on a mic, you're on a camera, you can't hide from that. And people are going to know if you're holding back. So like you have to figure out the lead indicators to get that lag measure that you're looking for. And if you don't do the work to get the lead indicators hit, the lag indicator won't be sustainable. And if it's not sustainable, then you're going to yo-yo. And that's why diet fads yo-yo, absolutely, people's businesses yo-yo. It's because the foundations aren't solid enough to support that result that you're looking for. And the other piece of that is like, you're going to hustle and grind and get to a place where that's not sustainable because you're either burning yourself out at the gym if you're trying to get that body, or you're crushing it in business, but your family life is suffering, or your relationships suffer because you're out here doing this and there's no balance. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the research and the things that we do to set up the proper foundation creates a sustainable model.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I think a big part of it too is just learning to be flexible and adaptable. And especially when we're super hyper focused on particular outcomes and goals, and then things don't go our way, life events happen, and then we just don't know how to manage that turbulence. And super interesting that you're talking about a strong foundation, because I actually believe that this foundation and just you being organized in terms of how you do anything is how you do everything is really what we start to see in other areas of our lives. And so coming back to just the dynamics that you guys have, which I love, by the way, I see the way you guys are together. Why was it important for you to start working with men and specifically helping men become this fully responsible part of the relationship? And I had heard a little bit of what you were talking about on one of your YouTube videos this morning. And that's what you were saying, one of your mentors sharing that in order for you to really overcome a massive struggle in your relationship, you have to own 100% of the responsibility, which is super interesting because we would think two people, everybody's got 50% of the responsibility in order to move forward. But I'm super curious about that part. Why is that important?
I mean, I was failing miserably. Mm. And, I was learning from all these people that like, I was taking all this advice and, looking at people that had something I wanted, yet they weren't the people that I actually wanted to be. So I was modeling incorrectly and it wasn't serving me. Maybe it was correct for somebody else. It just wasn't correct for me. And so I realized that, if I'm going to get better, be better, do better, have better, I had to teach myself those skills. So what better way than to teach it to other people once I learned it, hold me really accountable. And I figured that would put a lot of pressure on me to really know these things like intimately. And that would also then put an additional accountability on me to our relationship, because I've got people paying me to coach them. And I've had coaches in the past that were not congruent with, right. you know, their audio didn't match their video. And so, you know, I was adopting so many things from other people that weren't working for me, yet I wasn't adapting those things. Like you said earlier, I wasn't adapting those things to my life, my situation, my circumstance, my body, my marriage. And I also wasn't making space for who Mare was. I was just focused on fixing my relationship. Mm. And I know tons of guys that go out and hustle and grind just like they do in a professional world in their relationship. And there's never been a time where you ever heard somebody say, man, I'm like crushing my relationship right now. I'm like grinding the hell out of it. And it's amazing. Nobody does that. And so the professional me wasn't working in the personal me. Plus, I was disconnected from my authentic identity. I had no idea who I was. I was lost, and the money and the success was really my driver, and I didn't know how to balance both. And so I just committed to becoming the best version of me. And that's where Irreplaceable Man came in. It's like the irreplaceable version of us is inside of us. We just have to figure out the stuff that got put on us, the armor, the protection methods, the traumas. We got to figure that out in a formulaic sense. And when we can move it, then the real us is just there. It's standing there. You're just there. And you get to operate as the real you, and your relationship will benefit. And then there's a lot of depth in that, what I just said. However, that's the general overall or overview of how the, again, going back to sustainability, you can go to all these classes and courses, which I did, and I'd come back and I'm like, well, I'm growing. You're not growing. What's going on? Why is our relationship not better? But Mayor's like, because you're not showing up as the guy that learned anything. You're going and learning, but you're not applying it here.
You were in a very much in an information gathering stage and spitting it out at me, but not actually applying it. I think had to start with you, right? Like we all have to start with ourselves. You can't just say, oh, now it's magically better. Or things are, you know, and that's where you were for a long time. It's like, I'm gathering this information. I'm taking it. And it wasn't
purposeful
at all.
No,
right.
It wasn't.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's the difference between knowing something and then embodying something. Right. And, and then coming back to just that point that you said about balance, because I think a lot of us just need to maybe understand what balance really means. And oftentimes when we think about balances, I'm giving equal amounts of energies to all the different areas of my life, but is it really like that? Would you guys say that that is what balance is, especially balance in a marriage or balance in all of the things that are happening in your life that require the most attention at certain times or when a life event comes up, for example? How do you harness a sense of balance at all times?
You struggle with that more than I do.
Yeah. Well, I think balance is, for me, I'd rather think of it as like being present. Like that's when you get balance, right? Is when you're are present in each scenario that you're in. And so I think that that took us some time to really figure out like our relationship in balance. And because we worked together for a long time, like
desk to desk,
face to face, many hours a day. And there was no balance. There was no
boundaries, no separation.
There was nothing. And so I think once we figured out the present, that's when balance kind of came in. You know, like at the office, we're sitting at our desks. Now it is work time. This is what we're talking about now. You know, once we removed the, you know, late night computers in bed working, and, you know, instead of going out eat with work colleagues or going to a work event, it was a date night for us, you know, pulling kind. I think that's where you get balance, is like how you are present in any scenario.
So good.
And that, I think that took us a while to figure out.
It took years. Yeah, it took years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because for a long time, we could not separate anything. So there was no balance. We couldn't apply, you know, equal amounts to work and our marriage and our family. And it all kind of jumbled together. And so once we figured out how to be present in each scenario, I think that's how we achieved balance.
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember though, what was fueling my fire was my insane insecurity that if I wasn't the best, if I wasn't top, you know, salesperson, if I didn't have this incredible business, if I couldn't brag about my numbers, if I didn't have all this cash coming in, who would I be? Right. And so I was caught between this identity of successful man, provider, and this whole other side to my life that I wasn't putting much effort into anyway, because it wasn't a conscious thought process like I'm just going to take this for granted. It was like, I only have so much energy. There's only so much time. If I don't have this, I don't think I can survive. But Mary will just hold on. And, you know, she probably won't divorce me. And then, you know, I was like banking on that, but I was just lost. I was just wandering. I mean, I think I spent my 30s, like I'm 40 now. I think I spent my 30s wandering and trying to find that irreplaceable, authentic me. And that professional like lane that I really got lit up in and felt great about. And like, we're there now. However, it took 10 years. It really did. We have amazing experiences and have two children in that time and have built all these cool businesses and make money and go on crazy trips. Yeah. And we almost got divorced. And, you know, our daughter suffered in the beginning because even when she was like, you know, between 0 and 1, because I was so focused on building our business and being the person that provided at a high level and had this big bank account that I didn't have time for anything else. And nor was I willing to make time for anything else. So that was doing was, and this is something that Mary and I talk about a lot in our podcast is, or like we talk about it in Irreplaceable Man Community. And I have an exercise if anybody wants that, it's free, yeah, called the 6 Trust Types. And so what I wanted to know was, but I'm doing the work now and I'm showing up the way she wants and I'm doing this. And a lot of people will think that they'll go, well, she told me to be home at 7, I'm home at 7. And she wants me to take the trash and I take the trash on. She wants me to help with the kids and I'm helping with the kids. Like, why are we not connecting again? Right. And so I wanted to know, like, what's the formula there? Because everything, if you remove emotion, it's all a math problem. It's all a formula. There's a formula you're running to get the result you have. And there's a formula you need to run or changes to the formula to get the result you want. And so I wanted to figure out, like, I love math. I love engineering. I love figuring things out. So I just started building all these exercises back in like 2015, 2016 for myself. And then I created a coaching company out of it. One of the ones for the trust was there are 6 trust types. Most people think there's physical and financial trust, but there's emotional, there's communication, there's reliability. And then there's, oh my God, I just blanked on it.
Now I'm like, what did you say?
I will think of it. I completely blanked on it.
Emotional, reliability,
physical, financial, communication, reliability. And starts with a C.
Well, if you hadn't asked me, I would. So let's just move on.
We will come up with it. I cannot believe I just blanked on it, but there are 6 trust types.
Yeah. And I think you're offering something for people to access that as well. So I think we're good.
Yeah. I'll send you a link. Yeah. Just a quick little exercise to illuminate and understand what formula you've been running to get the result that you have. Because a lot of guys will come to me and say, I'm doing everything she wants me to do. And I say, well, but your wife is still telling you to do it, which means she's still in her masculine, which means she's not going to connect with you.
Right.
And they're like, my God, what is that?
It's going to come.
Keep going. We'll think about it.
Yeah. And you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because when we see a conflict in a relationship, everyone is always like, well, I'm doing all the things and I've done this and I've done all the things that she or he would expect of me. But we're not actually listening to what the person's needs are, right? We're not actually listening to what they want. We're actually operating and giving what we think that is right to give or what they need, but we're not really giving them what they need based on what we're hearing from them. And so now that you're in this place and coming back to just a sense of balance, because I actually believe balance is this dynamic thing that you're constantly seeking balance. Every single day you have to seek balance because there's different things coming up in your life. And again, that's being in the ebb and flow of life. And so how are you able to, you, Ian, harness balance now that you've seen sort of what it looked like in the past where you were super hyper-focused on success and on finances and really being that provider? What is balance looking like for you now? What has changed?
It's, by the way, it's competence, trust.
Competence. All right.
Yep. Yep. So honestly, balance for us, you know, one of the formulas that we came up with was illuminate, eliminate, calibrate equals acceleration, right? So you don't have to grind and hustle. If you get that formula right, illuminate what's working, what's not working, eliminate the things that aren't working or aren't serving you, calibrate into things that are, and start to dial in what else you need to add to the formula to get the result, then acceleration happens naturally. So I honestly think that balance came from the elimination phase. I think the elimination phase is the most crucial. You have to get rid of things that don't serve you.
Yes.
People, relationships, habits, mindset, language, environments. You've got to get rid of all those things. And you've got to be really honest with yourself. If you're hanging around, you know, we hear it all the time, like you're the sum of, or, you know, you're the net worth of the 5 whatever people around you. And you can still be hanging out with really high net worth friends. And if they're having conversations about their wives that are really negative or disparaging or whatever, then that's not who you want to be around. You might stay because they're all wealthy and you want to be wealthy. But if you also desire to have a relationship, then you need to surround yourself with people that are having conversations about great relationships that they have. Okay. And so the elimination phase for us, even in the last year, has been massive. Like when we left LA back at the end of June and eliminated that environment and that piece of our lives, so much stuff just opened up. It's like we removed the bottleneck and the universe goes, thank you, here you go, you know? And not only that externally, but the balance came from my internal balance and my peace and this freedom that I feel to align with what I'm truly meant to do, my true purpose. And even though my passion is personal development coaching and business coaching, and I love that stuff, it just still wasn't aligned as well as it could have been. And I wasn't okay with just continuing down that road, not being happy, not being truly happy with it. So the elimination balanced me to a place where I sit here and I'm like happy every day and I'm excited to build and this great opportunity hit my plate that's like, you know, 8-figure plus, and all these other people are coming out of the woodwork and I'm having different conversations in my friendships, in my relationships. We don't have this peace between us that's causing resistance and tension. It's been removed, which was living in LA was challenging because we didn't have a lot of we didn't have any family around. It's much more expensive than here on the East Coast. You know, there was just all this pressure. Mm-hmm. And not to say that it was a bad thing, it wasn't. It just wasn't serving us as well as it could have. Mm-hmm. And so when we made the decision to move back to the East Coast, so much stuff freed up. And also we were able to, like, the lenses got clearer, we were able to see things clearer. And like, if you read The Gap in the Game, which is a fantastic book, what we were operating in was the gap between where I knew I could be and where I was. And it was upsetting me. It was causing resistance and anger. Even though our business was doing well, the added pressure just of that environment just wasn't helpful. But now we operate in the gain, which is from back there to now, I've experienced all of these amazing things. And now without that added pressure, I can apply my 20% to get the 10x versus the 2x, right?
Absolutely.
And that's my experience, darling.
What? Stop.
Microphone?
No, thank you. I have it right here. Well, I think you answered that pretty well. I know.
This is the balance, yeah, Amer.
What's that?
That's the balance.
That's the balance, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm hearing from you, it sort of both of you are sharing this in almost different ways, but it almost seems that balance is really coming to the place of joy where you're actually feeling happy and fulfilled, which means that maybe I spend 10% of my time socializing and the rest of my time on my relationship and my family. And that's what actually gives me balanced feeling and makes me feel happy and fulfilled. And I think we need to just come outside of that view that every single area of our life needs to be given the exact same amount of attention in order to be balanced, but instead asking, like you were saying, what can I eliminate? What can I remove to really just stop that suffering or any of that internal conflict that I'm experiencing in most of the time.
Yeah. And you have to know yourself. And that's the personal development journey, is getting to the core, to the irreplaceable version of you, the authentic you, without the societal pressures or the emotional traumas and all the things that you've experienced that run you. You know, they're automatic in your brain, they run you. Figuring out the small micro pieces that trigger you, working through those, rewiring the brain, right? Neuroplasticity. And then just honoring yourself, because people ask me all the time, like, what's your evening routine like? What's your morning routine like? And I'll say, it's based on what I feel I need or what serves me best. You know, lately, Mare and I have just been laying in bed before our kids get up, listening to Abraham Hicks every morning, like probably for the last couple months. Every morning we wake up and I put an Abraham Hicks on.
Yeah.
And even that, we hear it differently because there's so much of the encumbrances that we put on the outside gone and eliminated, that we can hear it differently because the person hearing it is the authentic us, not the layered up us listening through like 3 different layers.
Right.
And so,
so good.
I'll say to people, like, at night, I'm not the guy that, you know, like reads a ton of stuff and does all these things like personal development, like doesn't watch TV. We put on dumb shows. Like last night we were watching people eating like the world's hottest peanut and watching them torture themselves. And we watch SWAT and we hang out with our kids, and probably a little too late, but you know, it's okay. And And I just sit and I watch YouTube videos on things that I'm interested in, and I'm learning and I'm researching. Like before we left LA, you know, like part of that piece that my dad said is like, what are your innate gifts? How can you start to sharpen those? And what are the things that you know will make you successful in business and in your relationship that you need to adapt or adopt right now? And one of them was organization. That was not a strong point. But if you ask anybody today, like I'm uber organized and structured and detailed. And that came from practice. Mm-hmm. I'm not a great runner. And I know that I've got to start running in order to run a marathon. I gotta lace my shoes up first. And I've got to get out there and move my body and like get my calves in shape. Like I have to start small. So at night, what honors me is not obsessing about my business or working till 10 p.m. It's cutting off at 5 o'clock and saying, hey, I'm going to chill. I'm going to eat dinner with the family. And we're going to sit in the room together. We're going to hang out. And I'm going to watch videos that I'm interested in and learn, because I love being curious and learning. And I'm at peace with that.
Right.
Even if I know I can work more on my business, or I could do another email or another, you know, lead magnet, or, but like, I can't buy this time back. That's why we moved back to Baltimore. We cannot buy that time back.
Yes.
With our family, my parents, her sister lives here, our children with their grandparents, nothing will buy that time back.
Right.
So we have that now.
I think also, like, for a long time, we were caught up in routines, you know, like, okay, in the morning, I wake up at 5:55 and for 6 minutes, I do this. And then for 7 minutes, I stretch. And then there was this, like, becomes a chore instead of like, you're like really feeling it and like in a flow, and it's bringing you peace and joy and setting you up for success that day. And I mean, we both have done this where we had these like strict morning routines that did not serve us. And even in the evening too, like it would be like, okay, we're going to read this book and we're going to do this. And there was, again, that goes back to being present in the moment. And especially this summer and with our move and kind of releasing a bunch of stuff, we've found that being present is exactly where we need to be. And it doesn't have to be this coordinated, like check off the list thing. Like, do we want to lay here for a little bit longer and listen to Abraham Hicks, or, you know, do we need to get up and walk? And it's like, what is going to serve you and your body and your mind and everything in that moment?
So good. Sounds almost like you're giving something to yourself so generously, right? Without really an expectation on the return. Whereas most of the time, whatever we do, even when we've set up a morning routine and we have this personal development routine, it almost feels like a duty because we said we're going to do it. We have to do it. We're holding ourselves so accountable to it. And we feel so bad if we don't do it. But what it sounds like, Mara, what you're sharing is that now you're almost choosing to be in the present moment and doing something for yourself without an expectation. It could be a walk. Yeah. It could be listening to maybe an audiobook a little bit longer. I love that. Yeah,
so that's powerful. Self-trust, though. Mm-hmm. That's self-trust being really dialed in, where you know, like, I trust that I need a little bit more sleep. And then you don't have a little mind, you know, a little voice in your head that goes, you're lazy, you're a loser, you're breaking your commitments. Like, I had that before. You've had that.
Yeah.
Where now we're like, let's get up. Mm-hmm. Let's get up. Let's go get the kids up. Let's go for a walk. That serves us best. And then, or let's lay here and listen to 5 Abraham Hicks for an hour, and or, you know, whatever it might be. But there has to be joy in that, because if you go to bed doing the things you think you're supposed to do, yet you're not doing what you want to do. No, obviously, if you're going out and like doing meth or something, and you know,
there are healthy habits that you're, you know,
I mean,
give some balance.
If Mary and I were staying up drinking all night and like getting crazy and you know, couldn't get up in the morning, like that wouldn't serve us. But sitting around and hanging out and playing games with our kids or like watching TV with them. You know, our mornings are very structured and they're also very unstructured. There is like one thing I learned with severe ADHD is that I have to give myself a list of things to do and tasks. I have to give myself a time frame to get it done in. I don't time block. I'm not going to say from 8:30 to 8, you know, 45, I do this, and then 8:40, like that doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And I beat myself up because for so many years, because part of me liked that structure. And part of me was like, I'm not doing, that's not happening, not happening. And then those two battled inside. And then I looked outside and everybody else seemed to be time blocking every 15 minutes.
Right.
Oh, that guy's successful. Oh, he time blocked. Oh, he has a 2-hour morning routine. So I'll time block 15 minute increments and I'll have a 2-hour morning routine. Why am I not a millionaire yet? Like that doesn't work because it has to be for you. So in the morning, we know what we have to do. There's a 2-hour time span between us getting up, kids getting up and getting in the car to go to school. And I know for a fact that my kids have structure. They get up, brush their teeth. They have to fuel their body with water. They have to fuel their mind with learning something. They have to give gratitude for what they're grateful for. And we have to understand what they're excited about for the day, every day. And they do their affirmations. And our three-year-old, like Ellis, when she was two, our daughter, bat off those affirmations. If I literally look at my son and say, I am, he'll go smart, strong, confident, courageous. Like he knows them. And that's what we're instilling. So between that 2-hour time period, both our kids are like us. They're easily distracted. So if we got up and we're like, in this 15-minute increment, we got to get this done, they would hate that. And so what we do is we flow with it. So usually in the car, we'll go, all right, guys, breakfast, they want to watch TV. Fine. But you got to learn something. You got to fuel that brain. So we watch Colossal Questions or Cranium on YouTube. And the videos are like 4 minutes. And every video, they're staring at it, learning something about the body, about the solar system, how deep's the ocean. Like my daughter learned about the Mariana Trench today and that it's 28,000 feet deep. It's the deepest part of the ocean. Dad, did you know that? I didn't know that. And we do that together because we're building their curiosity to learn and their habit of constant learning, not constant like, I have to do it so I can look good in front of others. It's, I want to do this for me because I like this and I want to learn about things. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be in that delicate balance of like, you know, like with working out, you're not doing this to make yourself look better at the beach or for your spouse. You're doing this for you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't or can't do this for you, or you're not at that place, then that's where the personal development work comes in to clear out and eliminate that part that's holding you back from saying, I choose for me. And this is what I want my body to look like.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So good. So good. I love everything that you said. And I'm sure everyone's listening like, man, what a power couple. They work together. They're making all these things happen together. Like I want to know what they're doing. And then earlier you said that you got to this point where I think that's where Irreplaceable Man was born from, this place where you also came to a point where you almost called it quits on your marriage. And so this is the stuff that a lot of us don't want to talk about. And what I love is that you guys share this so openly. And if I'm so curious, if we were to go back in that moment in time, what happened to bring you to that point where you wanted to call it quits maybe? And then what brought you back together?
Look at me.
This is the quit caller.
The quit caller. What?
I was willing to just let it be stagnant forever because it was convenient for me because I had food stocked and I had laundry done. So like I was massively selfish.
Yeah, that was the catalyst for a lot of change, and it could have gone one of two ways. Mm-hmm. And so we had a baby and Ian was just kind of like, okay, bye. Right. Totally not present. But yeah. Very disconnected. We are still working together. So I'm primary caregiver for the baby, still working a lot. And Ian is just being a drill sergeant. And it was terrible. And I think you remember this better than I do, but he probably said something. No, I know he said something stupid because he has had a knack for saying the wrong thing in any scenario.
And he's a man.
So I think he said something. Yeah. So he said something stupid. And my response was, you the kind of man that you want your daughter to attract? Like, would you be happy if your daughter came to you and said, my husband just said this to me? You would lose your mind. You would not be happy. And that sparked a years long journey that it took us a while to get back to like a foundational level where we knew what we were working towards and what we were working on. But I think that was the catalyst, was having a baby and really understanding how that put a spotlight on how disconnected we were and how much the dynamic had really shifted into this, like, into kind of a power dynamic where Ian kind of held this power with words and just being like, okay, bye, you know, because he didn't have to worry about feeding the baby or being up with the baby, or, you know, he was just like, yeah, I'm out, you know? And so sparked it. Yeah.
Very accurate.
And it took a while for both of us too, because then we got to a place where Ian was in his information gathering stage and that also created a power dynamic because he would be, you need to be doing this. You need to be doing this. Like, you should be doing exactly what I'm doing. If I was reading a different book, he would be like, why are you reading that book? That's a waste of your time. You should be reading. And there was a lot of, we had to figure out a lot through the process. And we reached a point where obviously we're in it now too, where, you know, we figured out what works best for us individually in terms of growth and learning and all that. And we found a respect for each other in how we're approaching things. You know, what works for Ian might not work for me, but that doesn't mean it's good or bad or anything. You know, it's just, we have different approaches. We're not the same person. And we, just because we're married, it doesn't have to be the same thing. And that's been a huge kind of revelation and also like foundational aspect of our relationship is like that mutual respect for what the other person is experiencing, you know, and not trying to correct it or solve it for the other person, which is something else that we had to overcome was, you know,
I'm a coach. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what my
yeah. Mindset. Yeah. That I do this for a living. I know what you should be doing. Yeah. That kind of, I'm like, no, I'm not you. I'm not your ideal client. So how would you know, you know? So.
But you have to look at the foundational pieces of that, which I think are really important for people to know listening to this, is that I was massively insecure, putting on a very confident front. I was desperate for love, attention, affection, approval. And Mare was Mare was the partner that was like making our lives work. And I was scared that if she wasn't doing everything to build her, grow her, do what she needed to do to be the best version of her, that one, I was going to lose her. And two, she might fail our family. And I'm not confident enough to take this whole thing on. I don't know what to do with this baby. You know, like I was massively disconnected because I felt unloved and I felt unapproved and unappreciated and taken for granted. All fake shit, by the way, all fake, like made up in my head. So that I wouldn't get hurt if she left. That's it. It's like, that's what most guys are going through. Their whole bravado, their attitude, their anger is all just a protection method because the person that they're married to is the person that could hurt them the most.
Right.
And if like Mare really left, it would have crushed me. Like I wouldn't know what to do without her, but I was going to pretend like I didn't need her because if she did leave, at least I had primed that pump. Right. We're like, whatever, I didn't put the effort in anyway. Of course she was going to leave. Whatever, I'll just go get another girlfriend. But really, I wanted to say is I have no idea who I am. I am scrambling. I'm struggling every morning. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to have this kind of relationship. I don't want to be doing this for work anymore. Like, and so there was this, like, it just started inching together. It's like a ratchet strap, like slowly but surely it started coming together. And we started repairing those six items of trust. We never had a physical or financial distrust. So we didn't have those two. But competency and reliability, communication and emotional trust destroyed.
Right.
We're actually a product and a result of, you know, the work to say, regardless of what's happened in the past, if you both are willing to work on it, it can be resolved. It can be refired or reignited. But it takes a ton of work and a ton of commitment and dedication to saying, to not being the old you and bringing that into that present moment and reacting the same way you did, or you're just going to multiply or compound the reliability trust or the competency trust. Partner doesn't believe that you actually can do this thing that you say you're going to do. So now instead of you not doing it and breaking the trust, now you're saying you're going to do it, not doing it, and you're breaking, and you're lying to them. So you're compounding that. And that's the same thing that happens with people when they go to the gym.
Right.
They're like, gung ho, January 2nd. And I'm fired up. I got my pre-workout. I bought $1,000 worth of stuff from Lululemon. I got the gym membership. I got some accountability partners. And by January 18th, life happened. You know, I'll go next week.
Absolutely.
This is, you know, it's been 2 months, but it's okay.
Well, it's like the, you know, Ian and I talk about this a lot because for a long time it was the, why aren't you noticing that I'm different? Why? And I'm like, it's not like all of a sudden this big gesture and everything's better and changed. It's these micro moments, right? It's, you know, I could have a bad day in it or, you know, be frustrated with something. And it's all in how Ian chooses in that moment to respond to me. And those are the micro moments that like, I think set us up is making each one of us making that choice to react differently or, you know, handle a scenario differently that like really started to rebuild that foundation. You know, it is just like going to the gym too. It's like, you know, what's the first step? Well, I actually need to drive to the gym. Okay. Did I do that today? Yes. Okay. Tomorrow I'm going to walk in, you know, and then the next day I'm going to go to like those micro moments, build those habits and create the overall, like, you know, lead you to the overall success because you've built on top of everything versus just going all in, you know, like you're not going to build a skyscraper just by plopping down a bunch of things. You're going to grade the land and you're going to build the foundation and, you know, like you're going to do all of those things first to get to this big skyscraper. And it takes time. And I think that we also in like an instant gratification society and world that we live in, like, you know, Ian's, well, I've changed. Why do you not, even me when I'm like, well, I read this book now. Aren't you happy? Like none of that worked because, you know, we weren't taking consistency. There weren't the right steps in place. You know, it was just this big grand gesture but that doesn't help anything. That's one time.
Yeah. Right. There has to be a dedication. We took divorce off the table, right? Like you can't just throw divorce out there. I want a divorce because that just gives you an out to not have to work on yourself because you are the marriage. The two partners are the marriage. So we like to think about it. Friendship is the first level. Are you actually friends with this person you're married to? Do you like being around them? Do you want to be with them? Do you want to hang out with them? What's your partnership look like? Do you want to have this person as a partner?
Right.
And then there's a marriage that's created from that. You don't work on your marriage. You work on your friendship and your partnership. Yourself first, then friendship, then partnership with your spouse. We also stop caring about what people thought from the outside. I mean, look, we're sitting in our kid's bedroom because it's the quietest place in this house. The bunk bed's behind us, you know, like cares. The information is the only thing that matters. And so, you know, there's this, we were talking about this morning, this morning, the five things. Remember Howard was talking to that guy?
Yeah.
So like, if you say to somebody,
this morning,
why are you married? And if you take out, this is really important. Somebody's going to cry on this one. Somebody's going to get crushed on this one. If you take out love, kids, expenses, companionship, and longevity, if you take out those five aspects of your marriage, are you still with this person? Because you don't need to be married to have any of those. You don't need to be married to have kids or split expenses or love somebody or have companionship or longevity. You can be friends with somebody for a very long time, not be married. Like, marriage is a piece of paper and it's created by the two partners creating who they are and evolving. So if you take those five aspects out of the running, what's left? And I guarantee you that 90% of people that are married who don't have an incredible relationship will be stumped on that one. They go, nothing. We don't do that much together. I actually wouldn't even be friends with this person if it was, you know, if I met them today versus 20 years ago.
Right.
If we didn't have kids and all these bills and all these expenses, I probably would roll out. And so that plays into the marriage and the everyday like dealings with each other, that animosity, that resentment plays into that. So you have to start letting go or eliminating all of those things that are binding up or encumbering the marriage and the partnership. And that's what we committed to. Plus we took divorce as like a card, you know, an ace in the hole off the table. You can't just throw divorce out there. And if we take divorce off the table, what do we need to do to have a great marriage? But not even that. It was really about what do we need to do to actually want to be in this marriage and have a model marriage for our children to see and for others who look at us to say, well, they're not faking it. They really did the work. They really put the work in. I want to learn from them. I want to grow. And it's not about just being a model. It's like, do we actually want to waste this time, this precious time that we have on this planet, fighting all the time and sleeping in separate places? Like, I don't want to waste that time. Because if so, then we're just going to roll out and just go do something else. Right. But if we're committed to each other, then we have to remove all of the constrictions and restraints on that we've put on the marriage or allowed to be put on the marriage. And when those remove, what's left? Oh, nothing. Okay, we need to build this foundation, like Mary was saying, micro pieces. You can't buy jewelry. You can't buy a car. You can't buy a house. You can't go on a sick vacation. You're not going to buy your way back into those trust factors that have been broken. You know, it's not.
So good. I think it's like a mic drop right here. That was so good. And you know, I think what a lot of us forget too, so you meet the person and then you have this one layer of relationship that you have with the person because that's your intimate relationship. And then life events happen and then you put on another layer of relationship. Maybe there's a death in the family. Maybe one of the parents passed away. So you experience that together. And then you have kids and then there's another layer in the relationship. And we don't tend to divide these and give them separate attentions, I find. And especially, let's say in your circumstance, you guys are working together. So how do you differentiate then between, let's say, drawing boundaries or having boundaries between work stuff and then marriage stuff and then being parents? Like, where do you see that dividing line? Or are you able to sort of ping pong back and forth from sort of wearing each hat?
I think now we've gotten to like kind of like a ping pong, but that's taken a long time. And that's been creating boundaries around when and where we talk about work. Or, you know, if it's on a date night, it's not going to be all about the kids. It's listening to each other, talking to each other about our own experiences and things like that. Took a long time to understand those boundaries, especially when we worked together full time for 10 hours a day, there were zero boundaries. And that created a lot of problems. And so I think the boundaries, the small boundaries that we put in place, like, you know, I used to have notes all over the house with Ian about like when he could talk to me about certain things. You know, like if we're getting ready in the morning, it's not time to talk about work. Or, you know, as soon as your alarm goes off, you're not rolling over and tapping me on the shoulder and asking me about an email or if something was done yesterday or, you know, if none of that. Like it's again, you know, we talk a lot about this because this has really, I think, helped us, is those micro changes again. And like, okay, well, we're taking work off the table until we get to the office. We can, you know, talk about work until we leave the office. And then, you know, we used to be in real estate. So that's a 24/7 business. So like, okay, we'll check in one more time in the evening if we have a contract or something that needs to happen. And then we're done. Once we go to bed, there's none of that. And you know, even talking about our kids too, it's, you know, you can't, just because you're married doesn't mean the only thing you talk about is your kids, right? Like,
and we have cool kids.
Yeah, we have really great kids. So, you know, you have to carve out the time and you have to be intentional with creating these boundaries. And, you know, I think now we've kind of got like Ian will come in if I'm, you know, downstairs working or doing whatever. He'll come in and, you know, 5 minutes. He's like, I'm just grabbing some water. Let me tell you about the phone call that I just got off of. Great. Perfect. And then he's gone, you know, or like I'll come up and say, I just need, you know, we have to touch base on this for 2 minutes. And we've figured out this flow that works really well, you know, and we've gotten to a point where like, you know, we're not offended if the other person says not now.
Yeah.
You know, like, and cuts off the conversation and says, write down everything you want to talk about and we'll circle back to it at this time.
So good.
And that has helped us immensely too, because I mean, Ian is more talkative than I am. So, you know, he could come up with an hour long like there was one night where he just monologued until midnight and I didn't stop him because I knew he was really excited about it and it was really fun. But like, he knew, like, I'm not going to interject and it's literally going to be a monologue because like for me at midnight, I'm just like, I don't have anything to say. Like I'm done. And he's perfectly happy to monologue, you know, and it's just, I know that he just needs to get those words out. And where in the past that probably would have created a huge fight. Because
he's not talking to me. You don't care about me. Yeah. It's just about our business.
But like, it's being honest with each other about what we need and what feels good for us individually and how we can respect each other's boundaries in that. You know, working with your spouse or even being home together all day, even if we aren't always working together, can be hard, you know, because everybody needs space differently. And, you know, so, you know, we don't make a point to sit down and have lunch together because Ian needs to just work straight through the day. And I'm not offended if he doesn't want to sit down at lunchtime. And, you know, just these little things where I think when we worked in the office, I used to get like frustrated when you wouldn't want to go walk out of the office and go have lunch. You know, but like, that's just not how he works.
My focus, if it's taken, then it takes a long time to kickstart it back up. So I think the other thing is we know what our priorities are.
Right.
And our priorities are us, ourselves, our relationship, our kids, our family. That's right. It. And anything else comes second. Right. Business, money, all that stuff. And so setting priorities and like really owning them and saying, you know, I'm not going to work today because I made a commitment to the family and I'm not pissed off about that. And I'm not worried that I'm going to lose business or if somebody doesn't want to work with me because I'm spending time with my family, like I got really clear on that.
Right.
Remember the two, I'm not going to say their names, but like, remember the two, like I went on a listing appointment once during this transition phase of us growing together and growing ourselves to grow the partnership. And I remember for the first time, like they said, can you come back tomorrow at 6 p.m. and get this listing signed? And I said, sorry, I can't. Is there a reason why you wouldn't sign it tonight? Like, you want to go with me? And they're like, well, we want to interview one more agent. And I said, but if you know you want to go with me, why do you need to interview one more agent? And they said, just come back tomorrow. This is a big commission. You earned it. They were a for sale by owner. I worked really hard to get in there. And I said, I can't. And in the past, I would have called Mary and be like, hey, blow that off. I got a deal, $25,000. It's the most important thing. But what I realized was, even though it's important to our family to make $25,000 more, what I was saying to her was, you're not more important than money or our business or these people you don't even know just got your slot tomorrow that I committed to you. And I looked at the husband and I said, I can't, man. Sorry. And if that means I don't get the deal, I don't get the deal. I got to honor this commitment. He goes, what do you got that's so important over a $25,000 commission? And I said, a date night with my wife. And the wife started crying and she looked at the husband and said, if you had treated me like that, we wouldn't be getting divorced. Give me that paperwork. And she signed it. And I wound up selling their house. And I'm still friends with them today. I texted the one that like a week ago. I mean, and I honored that. And in that moment, I realized how the error of my ways and I course corrected very quickly. Now, all of a sudden, I set a schedule. Like when I train real estate agents, I'll say, don't ask them when they're available. Say, I'm available on Wednesday at 4 or Thursday at 5, which one works best for you? And if they go, neither, you go, okay, well, let's look at next week. And they go, oh, you don't have any more time? You go, no, I have a very busy schedule. I'm very structured. I keep a very tight calendar. Those are the times I'm available to meet with you. You don't work weekends? No, that's family time. Like you can honor that, then you're going to get people that respect you, right. Not just you as some commodity that they can trade because you didn't work for them. Or work out for them, or it's not convenient. And I learned that vital piece. The other piece is we put a lot of structure in place for the main categories of our lives that we are putting our resources in, our time, money, and energy, right? Those are the resources we have.
Right.
Time, money, and energy. And so most Sundays, not last Sunday, but most Sundays.
Not last Sunday.
We did?
Yes.
Oh, not the Sunday before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most Sundays, like 3 out of 4, we have a weekly planning structure, which by the way, I have it on a document. If anybody wants it, who's listening, just write to Sherry. I'll send that over too. A weekly planning structure, our marriage or our personal, our marriage, our kids, education, our money, our investments, our health, like those are main pieces. There's like 6 of them, mm-hmm. main categories where our resources go. We need to make sure we're on the same page with those. Where is our money going? Where's our bills? What's our expenses? Where are we investing? What's our business doing? What's coming in? What's next steps? What are our kids doing? What's their education look like? Do they need anything? And it's structured because emotion can't come into a structure or a formula. There's no emotion when you say like, these are the 6 main areas. Do you agree? Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, we both agree. So there's no emotional, no like, yeah, but you chose and I want to choose. We both agree to not be immature. You know what I mean? We both agree to say, in the present moment, you're the best you. You're not the 4 years ago you that hurt this person or the 20 years ago you that got traumatized. In that present moment, like Mary was talking about, you're the real you. Because in the present moment, the future and the past don't exist. Anxiety and depression don't live in the present. Yes. So in that present moment, you're just being you and they're being them and you can just have a great conversation. So putting some structure together so it's not like Wild West and understanding your priorities, I think, have been major for me. Would you agree?
Yeah.
No. So good. So good. I've loved this conversation so much. I know you have a pickup to do very soon.
Oh, yeah.
School. Yeah. And so before we end our conversation together, because I could just keep going and going for a couple more hours here, is there anything else you want to share that you didn't have a chance to share just yet?
There are a lot.
We're just getting started, like, aren't we?
As much as Mare doesn't believe that she's an expert in this, like listen to her, like that power,
right?
I'm so proud of you. You did such a great job with this. You just don't realize it. Like you're so good on here. And Sherry would so be like, good. Hey man, your wife's a dud. I'm cutting her apart.
No. Seriously. No. What a badass, Mare, really. Like
you really are. Like you should listen back to this. I know you don't like listening.
I don't like listening to them.
You did such a good job. I'm looking at you, I'm like, girl, look at that power you're wielding. Jesus, I'm going to back off.
So good.
So, no, I mean, I think we said so much. People need to digest this kind of like massive information. And remember, it took us years to do this, and it's distilled down into these maybe mayors or sentence fragments. Mine are more like a little longer, a little more monologue.
I say mine are concise sentences.
Yours are concise sentences.
Yours are run on.
Mine are run on monologues. But did you have to make a commitment? I'm either in this relationship or I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm either committed to me, my body, my eating or not. Like, if you have discipline, then you have discipline in everything. Like you said earlier, how you do anything is how you do everything. You can't have discipline with one thing and not with another. You either have discipline or you don't. And so if you decide that you have discipline, then you have discipline in every area of your life. And you got to figure out what that looks like, because you just, it's not that you don't have discipline. It's that you haven't been being disciplined. That's all. It's just a shift. And so like, you got to make that commitment. I'm either in or I'm out. I'm committed to making my body the healthiest it can be, or I'm not.
Right.
There's no cheat days. Like people ask me all the time, like, you eat the same thing every day. Like you don't want anything else. I'm like, of course I want other things, but I have a commitment and an obsession over, like, I have Crohn's disease. I don't want the pain. I don't want future issues. I know what I have to eat. And I use, you know, like my dad said, channel those innate gifts you have that you think are bad, but like that level of obsession goes to my diet. And so, like, you just have to make decisions. I'm either all in or all out. There's no straddle the line. You can't straddle the line in everything you do, or you're half in, half out on everything. So mainly with marriage, mainly with the body, like, you either doing it or not doing it. You either want that result or you don't. And you make that decision. And then if you make the decision to go get that body or go get that marriage that you want, then you need to then step back and say, now, who do I need to become to have that and to sustain that? Because the person I am today, like I say this to guys all the time, I want this marriage. They go, great. You're not the guy that can have that. You want to make $1 million next year? You're not the person that can do that.
Yes, absolutely.
You're not. The formula you run is not the person that can do that. So why don't you go become that guy by eliminating the pieces that aren't him? Because the real him can get that, or the real her can get that. You want that body? Then give up the cheat days that last 3 days.
Right.
You know, give up the mindset, because that's the old you. The person you need to become who can get that body doesn't believe in cheat days. Cheat day is like trying. It's never going to work out for you. You don't try and get a good body. You either, like, you get a good body or you don't. Like, your body's not because you just kind of sometimes work out. Like, you get that from commitment and making a decision. The root word, right, is decide, to cut off.
Yeah.
Right? If you make a decision, that means you cut off the other choices and you go for that. And if you can't do it, then you need to become the person that can. I'll end there.
So good.
I can roll this thing for 3 hours.
Ian,
I love this
just
stuff.
Keep going.
So good. I heard so many amazing, amazing things today. And I heard that you have to decide and you have to commit and you have to be so incredibly clear and you have to be flexible and you have to be adaptable and you have to intentions around everything that you want to create. And especially when it comes to your relationship together, and it's something that you both work on, that you're 100% in at all times.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this amazing conversation today. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you to learn more about you, or maybe even grab some of those offers that you made for us today, where can they go to do that?
They can DM me on Instagram. It's probably the easiest. Just Ian Lobas, IanLobas, or Mayors at msnowlow.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
MSNOLO. And that's probably the easiest way, or private message me on Facebook. And that's, or I think my other email works. Ian. replaceableman.com. That works too.
All right. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. We're going to add all that to the show notes. Thank you again so much for your time, Ian and Mary. This was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thanks,
Sherry.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.